Welcome to another episode of Inside Rock. Today is about memorable moments from the 1970s, part one.
Ironically, the 70s, you said memorable moments?
Yeah.
I was still sucking on my mom's teat.
Okay, just that visual makes me squeamish.
You have to bring that up.
So,
all right.
I'm just saying.
Moving along.
I'm not going to say how old you were. I think you're about 10.
No, I wasn't. That's disgusting.
That's great.
Okay, I'm going to start off with a band.
Okay.
Are you ready? It's Black Sabbath.
Oh, Ozzy.
Their debut album was in, 1970, February.
That's awesome.
Yes. And go figure, it was on Friday the 13th.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was.
Makes you want to bite a head off a bat or something.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, is that the go-to? Whenever somebody brings up Ozzy or Sabbath.
Well, just saying.
Yeah. They recorded their debut album in a single day. One day.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, they did.
The whole album.
Now, hold on. So they recorded it in one day. So, I mean, the prep and everything was probably in the works.
Well,
Yeah, but even the production afterwards.
Do you imagine that, though, the talent to be able to record a whole album in one day?
Well, you know what? I guess it depends on if they were really high. Anything would sound good.
Okay,
well,
boys, good. It's a wrap.
It sounds good to us.
It's a wrap.
That's a great album.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's a classic album.
And well, it'd be up to the producer, though, to call what's good and what's not.
Right. So, actually, their album went number 8 in the UK album charts.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Oh, hell yeah. For the first album.
That's pretty impressive.
It is impressive. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so don't kick the 70s off with a bang.
Black Sabbath.
Well, that paved the way. Like even Rob Halford from Priest.
Yeah,
he brings up that album. Like, you know, that just set the path to a lot of these heavy metal bands followed.
If Rob Halford loves them, so do I.
Yeah, good old Rob. He's the best. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So.
That's 1970. You know what else happened in 1970?
What else happened in 1970?
Well, year before. Everybody remembers Woodstock. We talked about it in a previous podcast. But there was another festival called the Isle of Wight Festival. And that was in 1970. And it was by far the largest of the festivals to date. The estimates for attendance were over 600,000. And even though Woodstock didn't have an accurate head count because they were just flooding in from everywhere, they estimated the crowds there at 500,000. So the Isle of Wight, a year later, topped 600,000 people. And they had performers like Jimi Hendrix. Now, remember, at Woodstock, Jimi Hendrix performed on the final day, actually Monday morning of Woodstock. Remember, we talked about that?
That's right.
And there was like 400,000 or 500,000 people he expected to come out to. And because he chose to go last at Woodstock, he performed in front of about 40,000 or 50,000.
But I just chose. He demanded to go last.
That was one of the prerequisites when he signed up.
It kind of blew up in his face.
It kind of did. So anyway, this time he performed in front of over 600,000 people, along with The Doors, The Who, Lighthouse, 10 Years After, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Joni Mitchell. I mean, there was a ton. Jethro Tull and Scott's favorite, Tiny Tim. Yep. He was actually...
He wasn't there.
He was there.
Let me guess. He did one tune.
Tiptoe Through the Tulips, baby. And the fans went crazy.
Do you remember Tiny Tim got married on the Johnny Carson show?
To Miss Vicky.
He got married live on the Johnny Carson show.
And you wonder where those potato chips got their name.
What you right heard there, but that was an awkward silence.
Miss Vicky's potato chips.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't know if there's any connection. I'm just saying that's where my mind went.
Anyway. He reminds me of Weird Al.
Who?
Yeah, a little bit. It's kinky hair.
I can see that.
Yeah. Like, well, Weird Al could be his son. And like,
Weird Al hasn't got a nose like Tiny Tim, though.
Are you high? What?
What?
Have you seen Weird Al?
Have you seen Tiny Tim's nose?
Have you seen Weird Al's nose?
If he laid on his back, he'd call Shark.
Oh, my gosh.
And one more thing about the Isle of Wight Festival. They filmed that. There was a film crew there that filmed it, just like they did Woodstock. And there have been a number of mini films that came from that for different performers, like Miles Davis, Jimi Hendrix, The Who. They all had individual films just of that concert, like a documentary style, because it was so successful.
Yeah, I've heard the Isle of Wight. I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. It's huge.
Where was this held?
The British Isles.
Yeah.
British Isles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But anyway,
all right,
big event. Big event in the 70s.
1970 as well. The breakup of the Beatles.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, we could do a whole show just on the breakup of the Beatles.
And we probably will in the future.
Well, because I'm just going to talk about a couple highlights here. But, I mean, a lot of people speculate as to why it happened. But what led up to it and the conflicts between the individual members. Now, Yoko Ono didn't help the situation. But
She gets blamed, doesn't she? She gets blamed for the breakup of the Beatles, but I don't think that's necessarily
true. Well, no, John started to become a little weird. He brought her to all the recording sessions, and she started to give input and comments, and the other band members. One of the rules was you don't bring people to the recording sessions.
I don't
just
blame
don't
them.
Especially
do that.
Chicks.
Yeah.
Oh.
So anyway, he would bring her, they complained, he said, "It's John and Yoko. We're together. You get both of us. You don't separate us. She's part of the band now." And they didn't like... So I think they could have got past that. But when they hired the new manager, Klein, everything fell apart.
Yeah.
Even Mick Jagger warned Paul McCartney, "Oh, stay away from that guy." So Paul refused to sign the management contract. The other three Beatles were pissed off because Paul wouldn't sign the management contract for this Klein guy.
Smart guy.
So he didn't sign. So the Beatles said, "Well, we have a majority rules anyway, so we don't need his signature." So they hired him. And it was actually because he left his signature off, he was successful in suing to get out of the Beatles.
No way.
Later on.
That's cool. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's like story time without. Like you and I are just with our mouths open looking
more.
At him.
Well, no, I mean, there's a whole story behind this, but it's. There's too much to go through, but it was one of the major things of the 70s. And obviously they hadn't performed live in a while and they were actually preparing to do another live show. And Paul was getting pissed off with them saying, "Guys, are we going to do this or not?" And they were pissed off with him for not signing the management contract for Klein. And they just slowly drifted farther and farther apart and started to work on their own albums.
Wow.
And Paul actually gave an interview in April of 1970 where he said, "Well, we're taking a rest from the Beatles," and asked if it was permanent. He said, "Well, time will tell." And then they asked him, "Do you think you'll ever write again with John Lennon?" He immediately said no.
Right away. So he was flexible on the other questions.
Yeah. So him and John were not getting along. And when John heard that, he was pissed because he wanted to be the one to announce the breakup of the Beatles because he felt he was the founder of the Beatles and he should be the one who announced the breakup, which even made it worse. So after that, it was over.
Wow.
But anyway, there's so much more behind the scenes on that. We could do a whole show on that. Maybe we can do that later. Like, why did the Beatles break up? What's
I'd
the
love
backstory?
To do that. That'd be a great show.
Yeah, it'd be all right.
You're a hater, eh?
I'm not a hater. They have a lot of great tunes. They do. Amazing. Amazing amount of tunes. But back then, like when I was listening to classical rock and everything, I never owned one Beatle album. Never had them on a playlist. Never made a cassette mix for nothing. Zero.
We will change that.
Yeah, we'll do. There's so much content on the Beatles, and how long were they together? I mean, how long were they on top of the charts? It wasn't that long, considering what some of the other bands were doing, what we just talked about on our last show, and how long they've been around.
Yeah.
But again, look at Paul McCartney. He's still going strong. The talent shines through, right?
Yeah.
Actually, you know what, Paul? I heard a story. Paul pissed off Phil Collins one night. They're at some gal or some party in England, and Paul was already there. And Phil Collins walked into the room, and Paul said, "Oh, there's little Phil."
Little Phil.
Yeah, that pissed off Phil. Oh, that pissed off Phil.
Wow.
That's funny. Hey, turned me around. Well, I'm not turned around, but. The only, what am I trying to say?
What made you like the Beatles a little bit more? Thank you.
Yeah.
Give us one of your sound effects. Go ahead. There you go.
You know what it was?
What was it?
A movie. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I was good. I thought you were going to say Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Ferris Bueller?
No. Yeah, man. On the float.
Oh, yeah.
You know the song he did? It was a Beatles tune, right?
It was.
I said, that was awesome. And then I thought,
Was it Shaking All Over? Is it
Twist and Shout?
Twist and Shout.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the Beatles, they slowly grew apart. And you can see all the little things incrementally, how it added to it. Even George Harrison, one night was at a party, and he started talking to Art Garfunkel. And they both started talking about, you know, some of the things they were doing, and all of a sudden came up with they weren't happy. And then they started comparing their two Pauls.
Oh, yeah.
And they both said, your Paul's a lot like mine. You know, a little bit domineering and taking all the credit.
Wow.
And it was shortly after that when Simon and Garfunkel, 1970, broke up.
Wow. They broke up when?
1970.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, 1970. And it was...
Okay, don't quote out on that.
Yeah, it was 1970.
No, he seems pretty sure.
Queeks is looking at him with big
bridge
eyes.
Over Troubled Water. What,
Bridge Over Troubled Water.
What year was that? 70?
It's February of 1970. Hit number one.
Yeah. And they broke up the same year after going number one?
They broke up the same year.
Unbelievable.
But now, part of that was Art Garfunkel was trying to pursue an acting career at the same time they were trying to perform. And he said to Paul, well, you just write the songs while I'm away and then I'll come back and perform them. And Paul said, well, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, can you imagine?
And that more or less put the last,
It must be really tough, right? Being in a band and having those creative differences and power struggles. Like, we love listening to the music, going to the concerts.
But the backstories,
but
I know.
Yeah, I mean, it must be freaking hell.
You know what? If us three, if we started a band.
We'd kill each other.
No, we wouldn't. No, we wouldn't. No, really. And if we were successful, say if we had a number one hit, I wouldn't give a shit.
Right?
You just get along, man.
Dude, you're depositing money into my account. I don't care.
Right. Dude. Well, yeah, but that was the problem, though. That was the problem. Well, Paul was doing all the work, and Garfunkel just wanted to perform it.
Yeah.
He was like, he was, I think he had a little ego issue going on.
Well, here's a little piece of trivia for you.
Yeah.
What was Simon and Garfunkel's first name when they came out?
Garfunkel and Simon.
No. How old were they? They were 15 years old.
Yeah.
And they were called Tom and Jerry.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, Tom and Jerry.
I heard that trivia.
And their first song that was really recognized in 1957 was called Hey Schoolgirl.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you remember which song launched them? Like really launched them?
Sounds of Silence.
That is correct.
Yeah. Boom.
Sound of Silence.
Nice job.
Yeah. Hit number one in January of 1966. So, 1966 launch, 1970 done.
Well, it kind of helped that The Graduate used it in 1967, the movie, right?
Yeah.
Mike Nichols used it in the movie. So,
but Bridge Over Troubled Water, a ton of people covered that song.
Oh my gosh, great tune!
Yeah, Aretha Franklin was one of the big ones that covered it as well. But it's,
now there's a star. I mean, we could probably get onto the whole Simon and Garfunkel thing, but there was a thing with the recording of Bridge Over Troubled Waters, and I think Paul Simon. Who sang the lead on that?
Art Garfunkel.
Art Garfunkel. But Paul Simon wrote it.
Yes.
And he wanted to sing it, I think.
Well, they discussed it, and he said, no, you should do it. But later on, he said, I regret not taking the lead.
I heard
on
that
it.
Story. Yeah.
But they're saying that some of the notes that Garfunkel hit in that song were like the pinnacle of his career. Like they were just perfect.
That's just like a great song, man.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and it's Bridge Over Troubled Water.
We got onto the Simon and Garfunkel thing. I mean, I don't know where that came from, but that's great.
Well, they broke up in 1970 as well, which is a big deal then.
You know, the Beatles, getting back to the Beatles, so you're talking about the breakup of the Beatles. You know what their last official recorded album was?
Well, I know the release date.
No, I'm talking about the last officially recorded album, the last one they worked on.
The last one they worked on was Abbey Road.
Absolutely. Good answer.
But it was released before Let It Be. Because Let It Be had to be released and they were doing the movie.
That's right.
And that's one of the reasons they were doing the concert on the top of Apple.
Yeah.
They were doing that for the movie.
That's right.
And that's all part of the breakup, too,
story. But it's kind of, I mean, we associate the breakup with the Beatles and the album being Let It Be, their last album.
Yeah,
but really, it was Abbey Road, the last one they worked on to get as a group.
Yeah, kind of foreshadowing with Paul walking across with no shoes on.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I know.
Okay, if you guys keep talking about the Beatles, I'm going to have a nap.
Gee. Well, I got a couple more Beatle things in the 70s, but you guys go ahead.
So, you know, the next couple here are a little bit of a downer. I mean, we got a couple of deaths. I mean, we lost a couple of big players. Like Jimi Hendrix was number one. He died on September 17th. Of 1970, and the last person with him was his girlfriend. Do you remember this story?
You know, that's also a theme. These chicks are with these guys.
What are you saying?
Well, it's true, you know. Look at John Belushi. The same thing happened with him, remember?
See? Jim Morrison? See
Jim
what I'm
Morrison.
Saying?
I'm telling you, those chicks, I don't know, there's something going
these
on
these bitches are no good.
Right?
Well, they said the official cause of his death, he was laying on his back, he was passed out and vomited and drowned on his own vomit.
Well, I mean, along with the fact that he took 9 Vesperax
sleeping pills,
which was 18 times the limit.
I'm guessing that's too much.
I'm pretty sure that would put him into a deep sleep forever.
Yeah. That's...
What a waste.
Yeah, like... it really is, you know. I mean, and, you know, he had really such a short career. I mean, look at it. I mean, he died in 70, what, 3 years?
Like, and how old was he?
27.
Oh, the 27 and, club. We're going to talk about that.
And look at the impression he made just within a 3-year period.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's incredible.
And, like, that's another one. I don't know. And I don't remember, like, you know, you were buying the albums for us.
Yeah.
I was a little younger than you. I don't remember one Hendrix in your collection back then.
The only Hendrix vinyl that I have or had at that time when we were growing up, I had a 45 of the Star Spangled Banner from Woodstock.
Okay.
When he played the Star Spangled Banner.
Okay.
That's the only track I had of Stan Hendrix. And that's not to say I didn't like him. I mean, we can do a whole segment on, you know, the best guitarists. I mean,
I hope
I'm sure that's coming.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we'll do
and
that.
And I have my own opinion on that. But I mean, Hendrix, definitely innovative, very innovative with the electric guitar.
But buddy, you like, I have to admit, I give you 100% kudos, like all the albums and like, I learned from the best.
Thanks,
but,
man.
But you know, it's Hendrix. I look back at that. Holy shit. He didn't have one Hendrix album.
I did not.
And I've only learned of Hendrix, oddly enough, from my son. He's only in his early 20s. He's into Hendrix, so he's got some LPs now.
Yeah.
I thought, holy shit, this
I know
is some
that.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Now, do I have any in my collection now? I got them all.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got them all. That doesn't mean I'm a super fan of Jimi Hendrix. I mean, I recognize his talent and his innovation. But, I mean, if you like classic rock, you got to have Hendrix
in your
collection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or just see, they become really famous once they die.
Well,
just like the song in, what's the, Phantom of the Paradise, Goodbye, Eddie.
Goodbye, Eddie.
You know,
we'll remember you forever.
We'll remember you forever.
That's a great tune.
He had to become a martyr to pay for his...
That's a great... You know what? We could do a podcast on Phantom of the Paradise.
I love that.
Freaking
awesome.
Love that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Jimi Hendrix definitely left his mark. That's for sure. But yeah, unfortunately, 27 Club. And another one from this 27 Club, I may as well stick with it. Is Janis Joplin. And they died less than a month apart.
Oh,
both
really?
Of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Drug overdose there as well.
Initially, it was ruled that there were no drugs involved. And she died of alcohol-related issues, right? But...
They found out later that people were going around taking away drugs from these celebrities so they wouldn't be accused of drug use. So somebody cleared all the heroin paraphernalia. It was a heroin overdose.
It was heroin compounded by alcohol use as well.
Right. And her dealer was suspected of giving a very high dose of heroin to a number of people because there was a few other deaths on the
that
same
weekend
from the same dealer, from the same source of heroin.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, drugs plays another factor.
And once again, she's 27 years old. Yeah, isn't that crazy? The 27 Club hits again.
27 Club.
So is that it for the 70s? Can we move to 71?
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot in the 70s.
It is. Let's move on to 70. Now, Cha, you had one for 71. There's another 27 Club member.
Yes. Another enlightening story of a death.
Oh, here we go.
I feel all fuzzy all over now.
Yeah. Jim Morrison from The Doors.
Oh, my favorite.
Your favorite what?
A little sarcasm there.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not a big Doors fan.
Well, Jim Morrison was a bit of a wacko.
He was a bit of a wacko? Let's bang a sheep on stage.
He didn't do that.
He said he was going to.
I know, that would have been awesome.
No, he didn't, though.
Yeah, I'd pay to see that.
Hey, now that's another one.
Hey,
Jim. In your album collection, you never had The Doors either.
I do not have any of The Doors in my collection. I have an audio cassette. I think I fell on that by default. I don't know where I got that from. But no, I'm not a big Jim Morrison fan of The Doors.
Why are you bringing that lamb on stage with you?
Yeah, that's just wacky. Come on, man.
All right, so what happened to Jimmy Morrison?
July 3rd, 1971. He was 27, like you were mentioning.
27 Club.
The 27 Club. There was no autopsy performed, though, on his body.
Why not? How come?
Well, back then, usually, unless they suspect foul play.
Was he with his girlfriend?
He was. See?
Aha!
See? And actually, what was weird, during the testimony, her, whether she was high or not, I don't know, but her story changed more than once.
Well, she probably couldn't remember.
Well, then say, I don't remember, I was high. And actually, one of her stories, she actually said, I don't do drugs.
I don't do drugs. Yeah. But Jim did a lot of them.
Yeah.
You know what? I heard he died in the shower.
Well, that was one.
Of a heart attack.
That was one theory. And another story, how she testified that he came in, she had some powder. He snorted it, thinking it was cocaine, but it was actually heroin, and he instantly had a heart attack from snorting heroin. There's a multiple story. Like, again, this was a gong show, and the more I looked at this, it's like, it's just not good.
No.
All right.
Light my fire. I mean, come on.
Come on, baby, light my fire.
You know what line in that song blows my mind is, our love will become a funeral pyre. You know what a funeral pyre is?
No.
It's the pyre is the leftovers from a cremation, the ashes. That's a pyre. So there you go.
So what was the phrase again?
Our love will become a funeral pyre.
And did we mention this on a previous show? Maybe we did, about Morrison was banned from the Ed Sullivan Show for singing that song with the original lyrics.
He did.
He was supposed to change it, but
yeah,
he didn't.
That's right.
We couldn't get much higher.
Ed Sullivan asked him to say better. We couldn't get much better.
That doesn't rhyme.
But he said, sure, yeah, I'll do that. Went on and said, couldn't get much higher.
Yeah, good for him.
Screw you, Ed.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that in a previous show.
Yeah, we did. We did, yeah. That's great.
But anyway, let's talk about something positive in 1971.
All right. What do you got?
George Harrison.
Love George Harrison.
Before
Back to the Beatles.
Yeah, before Live Aid, before that became a thing, George Harrison put on one of the biggest charity concerts.
Oh, my God. Bangladesh.
Yeah. A concert for Bangladesh at Madison Square Garden. He did two shows, one in the afternoon, one at night, raised over $250,000. And back in 1971, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that was.
And it was for famine relief for Bangladesh. Good for George.
You know what? Let's look at George Harrison for a second. So he not only did that in 71, he also was working on his own project, right? All good things must pass. Double album. Two albums full of material.
Yeah.
And he's doing this as well.
Well,
you can see how he's being held back, right?
Well, this is in August of 71, and he had a huge lineup. He had Eric Clapton, Bob Dylan, Leon Russell, Ringo Starr was there, Billy Preston.
Billy Preston, love Billy Preston. We could do a whole show on him.
Well, the Beatles talked about him as the fifth Beatle.
They all loved him. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he was awesome.
Freaking awesome.
George Harrison was pretty busy, actually.
Think about it.
There was one story. I think someone witnessed him as a checkout clerk in Walgreens at the same time. Like, how busy was that guy?
I mean, how did he fit it all in? How did he do it?
I don't know.
Hey, what album, all I can think of when I hear George Harrison, is that him with the album cover with him sitting down wearing rain boots?
That's him.
Okay.
All Good Things Must Pass. Yeah, yeah, that's his album.
That was a big one.
Can you name one of his biggest songs while he was with the Beatles?
Let me guess. With the Beatles?
Yeah. I can.
No. What's that one about Lord? He sings about God.
Oh, Sweet Lord.
Sweet Lord.
Yeah.
Was that on that album? No,
that was after.
Oh, yeah,
was
but
after.
He got sued for that.
Yeah, he did.
He got sued for it?
Yeah.
Because it's too similar.
Similar to One Fine Day.
Yeah, that's
oh,
right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Anyway, going back to the Beatles, remember his biggest song with the Beatles?
Well, My Guitar Gently Weeps.
And the other one?
Here Comes the Sun.
Oh my gosh, Here Comes the Sun. That is a good, I have to admit, that's a good tune.
Great tune.
George Harrison.
Yeah, that's a good tune.
So yeah, I mean, he was in the shadow of Lennon and McCartney, for sure.
Well, who wouldn't be in the shadow of those two guys?
Yeah, but then when he went on his own, he did really well.
Amazing. What is Life? Well. I love that song. Yeah. It's my favorite George Harrison song is What is Life?
Now, you guys may want to do a Beatles podcast, but I don't know if I should even be going here, but...
He may be on vacation.
That's fine with me. I don't give a fuck. Anyways, you know who I think has the least talent out of all of them?
Ringo.
He's doing one of the best. He's awesome. You know how many albums he's got now?
That doesn't mean it's good.
Hey.
You know what?
God bless him.
I saw Ringo Starr in concert.
Did you?
Yeah, he performed with Todd Rundgren. He had a whole group of artists with him. And I saw him at the casino. And the guy's got, for a drummer, he's got zero rhythm. When he comes out, he's like Elaine from Seinfeld, full body dry heave. He's got no
rhythm. But you know what? For the Beatles, he was the personality of the Beatles.
Yeah.
He was kind of like the guy who added color to everything.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. George was, you know, very withdrawn. Paul was all about business. Lennon was off in
political.
The stratosphere somewhere.
Very political. Yeah.
And Ringo was just a lovable guy who everybody got along with and was funny.
Ringo had a lot of great songs. I love Photograph. And
remember his song from the Beatles?
Oh, My, My. And yeah, I do.
Octopus's Garden.
Octopus's Garden.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a wacky song to smoke a doobie right now.
I know, but it was a good song. It was a fun song.
Like, they're both of them right now are looking at me for something to say.
You got nothing.
No, let's just go on to the next
page.
Okay,
are we still in 1971?
We're in 71 still.
Okay, yeah. I'll throw something out there.
Yeah.
The onset of progressive rock.
Okay, let's hear it.
Yes.
Oh, come on, boy. Yes.
Well, their album Fragile.
You know what? You could love or hate Yes, right? Yes is one of those bands.
It depends on what era you're listening to.
Well, I guess
they formed in 68, but their real breakout album was Fragile.
Big Generator.
November 1971, and Fragile was the one that had
Roundabout on it. Come on.
And progressive rock, one of the things that you know, classified progressive rock songs was the length of the song. Like they were long.
Yeah.
Well, that's like some Rush songs too. Some of them are like 12, 14 minutes long.
We talked about that in our last episode, La Villa Strangiato. Yeah.
Well, I mean, look at progressive rock. You got, you know, Rush, you've already mentioned.
Oh, for sure.
Pink Floyd, Genesis, King Crimson, Jethro Tull, Supertramp. They all qualify as progressive rock bands.
Supertramp? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
their songs aren't as long.
I don't think I'd put Supertramp in with these guys. Yeah. You may be right, but I don't think I'd mention them in the same.
Me neither. I don't.
No. What was that one song? Jethro Tull. It was like a half an hour long or something on their album.
Aqualung.
Now that's another one.
No,
I don't remember you having a Jethro Tull.
However,
album.
I do now.
You do now.
I do now.
Okay.
Yeah, but you're right.
Yeah.
You know what? You're very perceptive.
Oh,
you remember my collection.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. That's
what was the Jethro Tull? Was it thick as a Thick as a brick. Yeah, that one, people said, what the hell are they thinking? Like, take a breath.
Yeah.
But anyway.
We saw Yes. Hey,
we did.
Yeah.
We did.
In Hamilton. That was a Hamilton place.
Yes. You saying
Yes?
No,
or no.
Yes, we saw Yes.
I think it was at Cops.
No. Trust me, I remember.
Okay, well.
It was Hamilton Place.
Well, anyways.
I still have the ticket stub, so I'll take a look.
We'll verify it
on our next episode.
All right, no verification needed.
But with that concert, with you guys, I love Yes, but when you go back to the original Yes, and they played some that night,
yeah.
I'm thinking, dude, we should have brought some Dubs with us. Like, what the hell are they playing?
Yeah, it's pretty wacky stuff.
It was.
There's no question. Yeah.
You know what my favorite Yes song is?
It's not Roundabout?
No.
How about, what's that song, All Good People?
Nope.
What?
Owner of a Lonely Heart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was...
That's more...
That's mainstream.
That's more mainstream.
That was maybe that's why I like it. Yeah. That was an 80s song. We're talking about 70s now. Get off of that band.
Now, what was that?
Oh, yeah, it was 83. That's
now, what was that Yes album you mentioned? Fragile.
Fragile.
I know you had that one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because I remember, that was a great album. I used to love playing that album.
Yeah, I love it. I bought on vinyl, I got Closer to the Edge by Yes. It's a really good album. Yeah, yeah. But they got a lot of good stuff. Starship Trooper. A lot of good stuff.
But they are atypical of progressive rock.
Well, they pioneered the use of like synthesizers and sound effects and you know, distortion in their music, right?
Yeah. Like I know Rush did it with Moving Pictures. Getty was really pushing the keyboards. But Yes, I think beat him to the punch to that.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, don't forget about Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. I mean, Emerson.
Well, that's true.
I mean, come on. If you want to talk about progressive and use of the synthesizers, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer were pioneers for sure.
That's true.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, and I should mention that you should check out the show notes for this episode. There you can find a link to a Spotify playlist for a lot of the songs that we mentioned in this episode. Okay, well, back to you, Queeks.
Let's talk about Grand Funk Railroad.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Now, Grand Funk, they changed their name to Grand Funk later, but Grand Funk Railroad, they broke a Beatles record at Shea Stadium. Beatles had originally held the record of 55,000 in attendance, 55,600, I think it was, at Shea Stadium. They sold it out. But Grand Funk, when they were going to play Shea Stadium in 71, I think it was in July, I think it was, June 5th, 1971, they sold out in 3 days. So the tickets went on sale on the Friday, and the tickets ranged from $4, $5, or $6. By Monday morning...
Oh, those were the days, eh?
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
By Monday morning, it was sold out, and they topped the Beatles' record, because the Beatles had previously broken, like, set a record of how fast they sold that Shea Stadium out, but not... in 3 days, like Grand Funk did. Amazing band. I love Grand Funk.
See, I just thought it was us that liked them. You don't hear much about them, like media-wise.
Grand Funk?
Yeah, right? I just thought it was like us thing.
I saw them probably about 3 years ago. Mark, Don, and Mel, they were all there. The original members. I saw them at the casino.
Oh, that's great.
And wow, they were rocking, man. And this was Grand Funk is one of those bands where the drummer is the lead vocalist, right?
Yeah, there's not too many of those.
Yeah, Don Brewer. He was the lead vocalist and he played the drums.
The only other guy I can think of is Phil Collins.
Genesis, yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Don Henley from the Eagles as well.
Oh, that's right. Of course, you can't forget him.
Yeah.
You know what I remember? You bring up Grand Funk. I'm going to bring up your collection again.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
The Gold 45.
Oh, yeah, the Gold
Press.
We're
an American band.
Gold vinyl, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. And I'm going to say
something. I still have it.
You still have it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something else. Out of all the songs ever, my favorite beginning to a song is that We're an American Band.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's my favorite. Who doesn't know that song? When it starts up, it's Grand Funk, man.
It's fantastic.
It is.
It really is.
My favorite
song.
I
went to a record show recently, and I was there, and I saw We're an American Band, the album, and the guy was selling it. I won't say for how much, but he was selling it, and I grabbed it, and I kind of thought, this is priced pretty cheap. Like, it's pretty cheap, this album. I pull the vinyl out. Guess what? Gold press.
Oh, my gosh.
We're an American Band. And I tucked it back in, paid the price of the tag, didn't haggle.
And you walked away.
Walked away clean,
dumbass.
Jack. Walked away clean. So I got the gold album, and I got the gold 45.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, it's good stuff.
That's great. I love that 45 you got, though. What was the other side of that? Do you remember?
Shining On.
Shining On.
Yeah, Shining On. Off the same album, Born American Man.
That was 1971.
That's 71, baby.
So yeah. Shall we move into 72?
We can move into 72 if you like.
I've got a good 72 for you.
Go for it.
do you remember My Ding-a-Ling?
Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry.
I love Chuck Berry. You know what? Think about Chuck Berry's history. All the songs he had. Johnny Be Good.
Maybelline.
Maybelline. He's had tons of hits. And what happens, Chuck?
My Ding-a-Ling.
Hits number one.
It's number one.
It's his only number one.
That's his only number one?
It's the first time he hit number one.
Well, he's a pioneer of rock and roll.
Incredible.
Do you know where they got the name for that?
My Ding-a-Ling? Probably, yeah. I don't know, a penis reference?
You would think. But I guess it's about silver bells hanging from a string, a gift from the grandmother of the singer, the original singer, actually, not Chuck. So, but they refer to them as his Ding-a-Ling.
Once I was swimming across Turtle Creek, man, those snappers all around my feet. Sure was hard holding on to that thing. No, that's not how it goes. No, sure hard was swimming across that thing with both hands holding my ding-a-ling-a-ling.
He wasn't holding his ding-a-ling-a-ling.
No. Yes, he was.
Oh, yeah, but he had a hard time swimming across that creek.
Across that creek. Boy, did I fuck that up. You get the gist.
Well, where really like the innuendo started, I guess Chuck, during one show, got the crowd involved during the chorus, asking the women to sing, I want you to play with my, and then they had the guys shout out, My Ding-a-Ling.
It was great.
So you can't get any more blatant than that, right?
No kidding. Yeah. No kidding. That was great. That was a great. I got that on 45. I got that on a 45 record.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I had to have it.
And you know what? When I first heard that song when Dad was playing it, and I was in awe, like, oh, my gosh, this is like porn audio. What the hell are we listening to?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that was my 72.
So good
reference.
For Chuck. And he goes number one with a live recording, right?
That's who, right. It was
who,
live.
Who does that, right?
Well, mm-hmm. What was that? Lucky for Chuck, the entire thing was filmed due to Pink Floyd performing a recorded gig, the slot after Chuck's. So
no way.
The cameras were going, and that's the only reason why they recorded Chuck singing that song live.
No way.
Because they were
and
originally,
that's the one that went number one.
Yeah, because they were originally wanting to film Floyd. Well, they just happened
to... that's so awesome. Yeah. I never heard that before.
Just lucky, lucky, lucky.
Good old Chuck.
That's awesome.
Well, good old Floyd.
Yeah.
Floyd. Yeah. So, 1972, what else do we have for 1972? I've got one here.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Chodge, the Beatles again.
Okay.
John Lennon's visa expires and U.S. immigration asks him to leave the country.
I heard it. Yeah, I remember
now,
that.
The backstory to that is, I mean, as you mentioned before, John Lennon was very political.
Very.
And he was... Oh, yeah.
Really?
Him and Yoko were very, you know, outspoken about their opposition to the Vietnam War. And the U.S. election was coming up. And John Lennon had scheduled some performances to mirror Richard Nixon's campaign outings so that he would be playing in the same city where Richard Nixon was, who was supporting the Vietnam War, and John Lennon was going to be speaking out against it. So speculation is that the Republicans said, well, we got to get this guy out of the country. And they did their best to get him out.
Out of the country. Wow, that's
dramatic. He was on a tourist visa and it expired. So, I mean, you know, legally they had grounds, but the underlying reasons as to why they wanted him out were political.
Wow.
But anyway, so that's, I mean,
that's
again,
how powerful he was, though.
But do you know how he got out of it?
Yeah.
April 1st. He did it on April 1st just to be
April Fool's Day.
Just to be an asshole.
Yeah.
Him and Yoko held a press conference. And they said, we are here to announce the formation of a new country called Newtopia. And we are refugees from Newtopia, and we are claiming asylum in the United States of America. And they had great immigration lawyers, and they made it stick.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So where the hell is Newtopia?
Oh, it doesn't matter. No, he said, all people of Newtopia are ambassadors of the country. There are no passports. There are no boundaries. Newtopia has no land, no laws other than the cosmic laws of the universe.
And they got away with it.
They got away with it.
I got to remember that next time I'm at the border.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time you're at the border, when's that going to be?
Yeah, not for a while.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Something else. We're in 1972 right now. I don't know if we're going by specific.
Yeah, no, list, 70. We're finishing off 72.
Okay, well, 72. I thought I'd bring up the New Year's Rockin' Eve televised on ABC. Yeah, hosted by Dick Clark. Yeah. That's when it all started.
Yeah.
1972.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
72 to bring in 1973. So if you look on Google, yes, it talks about the 1973 New Year's Rockin' Eve, but it was. Yeah,
that's right. And actually, Dick Clark felt that, and the only thing in that time was Guy Lombardo's New Year's Eve special, and Dick Clark thought this was extremely outdated, especially for the younger people.
Well, it was a big band; it appealed to all the older people. And,
yeah,
and for those of you who don't know, I mean, some of you listening may not know Dick Clark's history, but I mean, he pioneered American Bandstand, which was huge.
That was massive. Yes. That was,
in introducing a lot of the artists and songs. You know, on TV. It was a TV show.
Yes.
And he also hosted $100,000 Pyramid, but that came after.
Are we on the fucking game shows now?
Now we're on the 2000.
It's Dick Clark.
Okay.
Anyway.
But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because actually the first airing was in 1972. They were ringing in 1973. And some of the performers they had, the title was Three Dog Nights New Year's Eve Rockin' Eve 1973.
Nice.
Yeah, Three Dog Night. Yeah,
love,
yeah,
Three, yeah, Dog Night.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, Guy Lombardo was on CBS. Dick Clark started New Year's Rockin' Eve on NBC.
Right.
And then it moved over to ABC for the 74-75 show.
Yes. Isn't that funny? They moved it over. That was a big mistake, don't you think?
Well, not unless they couldn't come to terms on contract.
I'm just saying.
But don't forget, I mean, American Bandstand was ABC, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, he had ties with ABC, and he probably got a better deal from them.
Yeah, wow. You know who else he had on that night?
Who?
Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Love them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and Helen Reddy.
Helen Reddy. I love Helen Reddy as well.
And Helen Reddy was like the pioneer of the feminist movement.
She just died,
movement.
Eh?
Yeah. Yeah, she was the feminist movement that lit the fire.
I am woman.
Hear me roar.
Yeah. Oh, is that her?
Yeah, that's good
her,
for her. Man. Yeah,
that's okay. Her. Mm-hmm.
And one more, Al Green.
Al Green. Love, yeah. Al Green as well. Yeah, good
so
stuff.
So that was a great show. Anyways,
yeah. Wow.
Next, I just wanted to fit that in.
You know, talking about music shows, that sort of thing, in 1972, I mean, who does it remember, I mean, from our era,
anyway,
the Midnight Special.
Oh, man.
Wolfman Jack.
Come on.
That was great. What? Oh, obviously, that was on at midnight.
Well, you know what? It followed the Johnny Carson show at the time.
Yeah,
debuted in 72, and it was a 90-minute show.
Yes,
with musical acts, and just anybody who was anybody was on the Midnight Special. I mean, to name a few, you've got ABBA, AC/DC. I'm going in alphabetical order here. Aerosmith, Aretha Franklin, America.
You're only in the A's. This could take all night.
It's incredible. I'm just telling you how many acts appeared on the Midnight Special.
It was the place to be, for sure. Everybody watched it.
Oh, my. Yeah, I was there, for sure. For sure.
And you know what? Right. Like you said, it followed Johnny Carson. I've recently put up an antenna on the house, and I love Johnny Carson reruns.
Oh, the old Johnny Carson shows?
I love the Johnny Carson reruns. But back then, I remember waiting as a kid, when's this stupid old show going to be done so I can see the Midnight Special?
Oh, yeah.
And now fantastic. You appreciate Carson.
Oh, well, now I love Carson. But I also remember that's some time I spent with you, Queeks. Like,
yeah.
We used to watch Midnight Special.
It was the place to be.
Man. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. It was great.
I mean, maybe on our Weird and Wacky, we can do a bit on the Carson show and all the things that happened there.
Like Carson show, that's another one.
Well, hey, another thing is, remember Fridays we used to watch?
I love Michael Richards from Seinfeld.
Yeah,
Kramer.
Yeah, that's where he got.
That's where he got his start. Was on Fridays, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was classic. Hey, do you know who made the most appearances on the Midnight Special? They made 4 appearances in the run.
Give us a hint.
We saw them, and I'll never let you forget what you did to me.
All right, ELO.
There it is, Electric Light Orchestra. Right. Yeah, they made 4 appearances on the Midnight Special.
Well, wait, what ELO. Are you guys talking about?
Nah, we'll talk about that on another show.
I'm just going to say this. Roll Over Beethoven
as
an encore.
We heard it, but it was from the parking lot.
Yeah, let's beat the traffic. Let's beat the crowd. Let's get
out. Oh, you make one mistake and you never live it down for the rest of your life.
Ever. Right.
That also reminds me of a hockey game we went to. You wanted to leave early.
Uh-huh. A hockey game?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me this story.
Was it you? Yeah. And then in the parking lot, we're in the car, and we listened to the news, and they tied it. Two quick goals.
Okay, first of all, I don't recall ever going to a hockey game with you. First of all.
What the hell?
I don't remember going to a hockey game with you.
Okay, I'll go home crying a little bit.
No, I'm just saying it. I don't remember
it. It was in Buffalo.
Okay, that narrows it down.
And O was with us, and he got freaking pulled over because his name matches somebody else, a bank robber. He missed the whole first period.
That was Buffalo.
See?
And was that Carolina? Was it? I remember that.
Yeah. He missed the whole first period because he got hauled in. And then
the border patrol.
We missed the overtime because you wanted to leave early.
Okay, that doesn't sound like me. Okay.
I don't want to have you harping on me about that ELO thing ever again. No. I will bring this up.
Okay. I'm just telling you, I can prove that. That I don't know what's going on.
Oh, I take Chaw's word for it.
Of course you do.
Of course I do.
What are we talking about again?
We're talking about concerts.
Right, okay. Oh, yeah. All right, go ahead.
Here's another one.
But we digress.
Yeah. Here's another one.
All right.
Don Kirshner.
Don Kirshner's rock concert.
That's
the ultimate, I think.
Don Kirshner's rock concert. He had so many popular acts on his show. They're endless. I mean, I won't name them.
Are they on YouTube now,
Don Kirshner? Well, no.
They might be.
No.
No?
Don Kirshner's rock concert. So when Don Kirshner died, unfortunately, all of the footage from Don Kirshner's rock concert was locked in a vault.
It was purchased by another company.
Another company, and they refused to release it. And
to this date?
No, that's brutal. Try finding the shows from Don Kirshner's rock concert. You can't find them. So I signed up. I registered. I want to be notified as soon as they're available. It's going to be iconic. But yeah, try finding them. You can't.
I wonder why.
I don't know. Midnight Special? Go on. You can find them all over the place.
When did he die?
2011.
Okay, so it's only been like 9 years. So
yeah, but if they purchased it, you think they're going to release like a DVD set or something? And
anything. Like, you know what? I'd buy it. Let's release it. Let's see it.
And like you said, like that's cloud. That's a lot of good stuff.
Oh, tons of stuff. I mean, it had a good run too. I mean, between Midnight Special and Don Kirshner. Those were the two shows, really, right there.
Oh, yeah. Watch them all the time.
Oh, everybody did back in the 70s, for sure. Yeah.
All right. Anything else in 72? Or we move on to 73?
Well, I'm not going to go on about it, but there's the summer jam at Watkins Glen. That was huge, right?
Yeah.
In New York.
It was.
Yeah, that was huge. We don't need to go into it very much, but I just wanted to give its kudos. That was a huge show. It was on July 28th. 600,000 music fans.
600,000?
Yeah, it was huge. It was huge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 150,000 tickets were sold for $10 each.
Wow.
But 600,000 people showed up?
Yeah. Well, there was close proximity seating. Then there was, you can't stop people from piling in.
Sounds like Woodstock.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly.
Piled around, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Piled in.
Yeah.
Wow.
So...
All right, so moving into 73.
Yeah, yeah.
This bummed me out big time when this happened.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah?
What?
Are we talking about Jim Croce?
Yeah.
I don't know why I knew that.
Yeah.
As soon as you said 1973, and really, I didn't read your notes or anything, Jim Croce.
Well, you know, and so unfortunate. Tragic. Because it was avoidable. I mean...
Why happened?
He was flying from Louisiana Texas in a private chartered aircraft, and the pilot just made a mistake, and he didn't give himself enough runway, and probably the plane was overloaded, and he hit a tree at the end of the runway, and all six people on the plane were killed. Croce was 30 years old.
Isn't that crazy?
73 was going to be a huge year for him. He had Bad Bad Leroy Brown, You Don't Mess Around With Jim, Operator, I Got a Name, One Less Set of Footsteps, Time in a Bottle was climbing the charts, and ended up being the number one record by the end of the year.
Time in a Bottle?
Time in a Bottle. And it was only the third time that a song had hit number one for someone who's already deceased.
Really?
You know who the other two were? There's a bit of trivia for you. Who were the other two?
That hit number one after they were deceased?
After they were dead.
Well, I don't know. Go ahead and lighten us.
Well, Otis Redding.
Okay.
Sitting on the dock of the bay.
Yeah, yeah.
And we already talked about her today.
Joplin?
Janis Joplin. Me and Bobby McGee. Those are the only other two that hit number one after they passed away.
Wow.
Jim Croce was the third.
Well, but you're a pilot, and you've always told me the majority of plane crashes are pilot error.
And on takeoff, because takeoff is the most dangerous part of flying.
It was takeoff?
That it was takeoff.
Because you don't have wind speed.
Well, no, I mean, you're building speed and running out of runway. In landing, you're lowering speed and you got the whole runway in front of you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, landing is the easy part. It's taking off is where all the risk is. Now, the ironic part of all this is that a week after Jim Croce's death, his widow, her name was Ingrid, got a letter in the mail that he wrote her while he was on tour.
No.
Yeah, that's creepy. That's not cool.
And in the letter, she could tell he was growing weary of life on the road and was thinking about maybe taking a break and spending more time on other things and family.
I'm bummed
and
out.
His last sentence in the letter was, "Remember, it's the first 60 years that count, and I've only got 30 to go.
Are you serious? I love you." Oh, come on, you're killing me, man.
Isn't that awesome? Like, she received that a week after he died.
How do you, okay, I got goosebumps. That's crazy.
Yeah, but I really love his music. I play the guitar, too, and I play a lot of his songs. He was brilliant.
I love I've Got a Name. I love that.
It's great. He's got a ton of good songs.
I know.
If you look at his song list, there are tons of songs that people don't even remember. That's Jim Croce?
I know.
You know, it's great. Yeah. And he's one of my favorites.
Huh. Okay, how many deaths have we covered so far? Jim Morrison.
Janis Joplin, Jim Croce, Jimi Hendrix. Yeah, I know.
Okay, anybody else got a death to report?
I don't know. Let me take a look.
Well, when we get into the latter half, volume two of the 70s, there'll be more deaths.
Well, yeah, we're only going to go up to 1974 on this episode. We'll do 75 to 79 on the next episode.
Yeah.
So,
73 now?
73, yeah. You guys got something for 73?
No, I think we're covered for 73. There's so much more. I mean, we could talk about...
Can I bring up something?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the King Biscuit Flower Hour?
Yeah, baby!
73.
Go ahead, Oat. Say it. I don't know.
I haven't got a clue what you're talking about.
King Biscuit Flower. It's awesome.
Jeez, I was still sucking on Mum's teat. And I know what that is.
And now he's 12 and he's still sucking.
Oh, gosh.
It's 2 years later after you said that before. So how old were you?
Really?
I was in the tit quite a bit.
For a while. You made a rhyme, Josh.
Yeah. for anyone else to...
Hang on, John. I need that sound effect. Thank you.
All right, there we go.
So it was an American syndicate radio show that featured concert performances by, you know, various rock music recording artists. So
yeah,
another show. It was great. And it was Sunday nights, from 73 till, actually it ran till 2005.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. Very popular.
Yeah.
Foghat was on there. Come on, man. Oat's looking at us like, what are you talking about?
What's
the King Biscuit Flower Hour?
Yeah.
It's iconic.
And the concerts were usually recorded with a mobile recording truck. Then they mixed and edited the broadcasts on the show within a few weeks. But yeah, it was a great show. It's a great show.
Okay, so that's 73. What about, any more for 73?
No.
No, I don't think
so. Okay, 74. 1974.
What do you got, Queeks? Anything?
Well, Zeppelin launched their own label, Swan Song.
Well, that was pretty big for them.
Well, it was big for anybody. I mean, not many artists had done that before, launched their own label.
Mm.
And Zeppelin, I mean, they were on top of the world by 74. I mean, why not, right? So launching Swan Song Records seemed like the thing to do. And, it worked out for them. No kidding.
I wonder what the motivation would be there. Like, why Why would somebody want to
control?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I mean, try recording an album, see the process and what's involved. I'm pretty sure you'd probably want your own control, right? You call your own shots. I mean, thing that comes to mind right away is Paul McCartney and the Beatles with Let It Be. Remember, we brought that up with
the Wall of Sound, Phil Spector.
Phil Spector, yeah, he had total control over that, and
McCartney didn't like it.
No, so he did his own version in 2003 of Let It Be, and
with Ringo.
Absolutely, that's right. Yeah. So yeah, having your own label, you call your own shots, and Zeppelin did that. So they were the first ones to one of the first ones to do that, right? So
74 also saw the return of Bob Dylan. He came back for the first time since 1966 to do live concerts, and he was backed up by the band.
The band.
Yeah. Robertson. Levon Helms and the boys were backing him up.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had a huge following. But Dylan afterwards said, you know what, it was just all about, you know, everybody's saying, oh, the energy. And he was all about the message. Yeah. Right, and nobody would talk about the messages, and he says that was absurd. Even so, it was one of the biggest concert draws to date, with ticket sales of almost $100 million over a period of 6 weeks. And in those 6 weeks, they did 40 shows in 21 different cities.
That is spectacular.
No kidding.
Think about that. Think about those numbers.
I know, 40 shows in 21 cities in 6 weeks at the beginning of 1974. Anyway, that's Bob Dylan and the band.
Now, not a big fan. I got to be honest. I'm not a big fan of the band.
I was going to say, there's another guy we didn't find in your album collection.
Well, Bob Dylan?
Yeah.
No.
And Levon Helms?
No.
Now, see,
although we're bringing the Giz back, that he's got some stories about the band.
I think he does, right?
Yeah, we're going to bring him back to talk about Levon and the band.
Now, I know you're not, Oat, you're not a Neil Young fan, correct?
No.
Okay.
I think that was quite apparent on the last episode.
Yeah.
And again, not taking away from his talent, he's just not my favorite guy to listen to.
Okay. That's how I think I feel about Bob Dylan. I have no idea how this guy became popular.
But you got watch the documentary.
Oh, okay.
Watch the documentary on Netflix.
Okay, I will.
About Bob Dylan. Directed by...
Neil Young.
No. Oh. Martin Scorsese. That's right.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, watch it and you'll have a whole new appreciation.
Okay,
well, Martin Scorsese directed the film, The Last Waltz.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The band's Farewell, right?
Yeah.
I promised to shut up about Bob Dylan until I watch that.
And you know what? I kind of felt the same as you, and I appreciated some of his music, but I have some bad memories about the song Everybody Must Get Stoned. But
I'm sorry about that.
That involves Queeks.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
But we'll tell that at another story.
I mean, Bob Dylan won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 2016.
And then they couldn't find him for a month to tell him that he won.
Do you know that?
Yeah, he didn't show up for the ceremony.
No, he didn't show up, and he didn't even know he won until a month after. Nobody could get a hold of him.
That's awesome.
Hey, Bob, you won the Nobel Prize. He probably went, yeah, well, whatever.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just leave it in the mailbox.
Just in the mailbox.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay,
all right.
I'm going to bring up something for 1974.
Okay.
And it is when the guitarist, Mick Taylor left the Stones.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know, it just sticks out because, really? So you were in the Stones and you left. And actually, Mick said he was probably the most talented out of all of them, of the guys.
Yeah. Well, even more than Keith?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Really? And I don't think... Mick and Keith, I guess, as far as Jagger was concerned, they didn't really mix very well.
By the way, there's another documentary new on Netflix on Keith Richards, which I'm about halfway through. It's pretty
That's
good.
Awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You like that one, too.
Oh, I know I would. Yeah. Love Keith.
Yeah. So Mick Taylor. Yeah. So where did he go from there? Where did Mick Taylor go from there? Because he was super talented, that guy.
Yeah, he went on to record a string of classics with the band, including Let It Bleed. Sticky Fingers, but that's what the Stones. But Nice. I don't know how he went on with after that, but and he was asked if he regrets it and leaving the Stones, and he said no. He said if he would do it again, he said no because they had some difference. In fact, he actually said he can't believe how these guys have when he was first playing with them, he couldn't believe how they had some hit songs. He said they sounded horrible. They couldn't carry a beat, nothing. Like he said, they sucked. Yeah, so we said, you know what? I gotta leave.
That is awesome story.
It's all that Jack Daniels.
That is awesome maybe. Story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you have to remind everybody, too, that we're going to try to put some links in the show notes to some of the things we're talking about today. So be sure to check out the show notes.
I'll be checking them out.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll put some, you know, some background information and further information about some of the stuff we're talking about.
Yeah. Apparently, though, he did go on to a longer, long, fruitful career, but never enjoying the kind of fame that the Stones did. But he did. He went on and he made a career.
Hey, as long as you're happy.
That's right. That's right. So, wow. But I what stuck out the most though, yeah, he thought the Stones sucked.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
1974, Queeks, you got anything for 74?
Cass Elliott, Mama Cass Elliott.
Cass. Now again, the different stories about how she passed away, right?
Yeah, she died July 29th, 1974.
Wasn't it choking on a sandwich?
Well, that's what they say, you know. They said that she choked on a sandwich. She was in bed. She was sitting up, and they found her that she had choked on her own vomit from a sandwich.
Well, there you go.
But they later revealed that the sandwich was found on the nightstand intact. It wasn't, in fact, a sandwich.
That was sandwich number three.
That's good, Jeff.
Sorry.
That's good. But there were no drugs involved. That was cleared that there were no drugs, but she had choked to death on her own vomit.
No, that is horrible. But can I ask you guys something? When is the last time you guys ate a sandwich while in bed?
Yesterday?
Never. Well, don't forget though. No. I mean, these people are on the road a lot. They're in hotels,
that's unusual. But yeah, that's in a hotel room. I mean, it's probably more likely, right?
Well, okay, you're right. I'll give you that. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
For sure.
It's a sad story regardless.
But you know what? She died in the flat of Harry Nilsson. Now, do you know who Harry Nilsson is?
Well, you should also mention who Cass Elliott was with, because some people may not know that.
The Mamas and the Papas.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, the Mamas and the Papas.
Right.
But she died in the flat of Harry Nilsson. And 4 years later, Keith Moon died in the same flat of Harry Nilsson.
Eating a sandwich?
Not eating a sandwich, but yeah, two major stars.
who's what guy you said? What was his name?
Harry Nilsson.
Who the hell's that?
Without You. Remember that song? Remember Without You? Harry Nilsson's super popular. Super popular.
Really? So that bitch is no good.
Harry?
Yeah.
Harry.
Harry.
That's what are you thinking of?
That's Jerry Lewis. Yeah,
you know
the geisha boy, Harry. The rabbit. Yeah, you'll find us digressing quite a bit to movie references with classic quotes, but I mean, we can't help ourselves.
Harry.
Yeah. Classic that's movie, classic. Jerry Lewis, the geisha boy.
I love it. Love it.
I may have to put a link in there about that scene.
Oh, for sure, do it.
That's when he's unpacking his luggage from the cab.
Yes,
at the hotel.
Then the hat,
right? And then Harry's on top of the cab.
Yeah, he rides away.
And the cab pulls away, and Harry, it's his rabbit. He's a magician, right?
Yeah.
And we're getting off topic. I know, but we got to explain this. Harry's the rabbit that he uses in his magic show, and Harry goes taking off on top of the cab as he watches him pull away. Harry.
You got to see it. Oh, you got to do that in show notes.
Okay, I'll try to find it, put it in the show notes.
Oh, don't worry, I'll help you find that. I got the movie on my Plex drive. Oh, there's a plug for Plex. There you go.
All right.
There it is.
All right, so we're going to get back on track here. Sorry, Chuck, I've got another one from the Beatles from 1974.
There you know we what? Go. Can we do something then?
Beatles, 1974, when they broke up in 1970. How's that possible?
I'm a member of the Beatles.
Can I make a request, please, before you go into your story?
Sure.
We need to do one solid podcast one night just of the Beatles, get it all over with, show.
It's impossible to get all over. There'll always be references.
Oh, whatever, go ahead.
Okay. Whatever, Russ.
Whatever, Russ.
Again, Christmas vacation.
There all you right. go. And by the way, we're going to be doing a podcast on our other
Weird and Wacky.
And that's coming up, but Christmas movies, and definitely there'll be some references.
That'd be, released Christmas week.
Christmas week, yeah. So watch for that one.
All right.
So what were we going to say?
I was going to say John Lennon joins Elton John on stage in New York for 3 songs.
Now, what did I tell you guys? Remember I told you I went to a record show? I go to a lot of them, right, to buy vinyl. I bought that import with those songs on an album.
Really?
Yeah, I have it. I have that concert and the songs they performed together.
And the main song they performed, John Lennon's only number one hit after he left the Beatles. You know what it was?
No, I don't.
Whatever Gets You Through the Night.
Whatever Gets You Through the night.
Yeah, and guess who played keyboard in the studio for John on that song?
John Lennon. John Lennon. Elton John.
Elton John. That's correct.
John Lennon. Duh. Oh, my God.
I had it bass backwards. Oh, that was Elton stupid. John. Elton John also helped out with some of the background vocals, too, so on that song.
Is that right?
The studio version, yeah.
Cool.
So he joined them on stage at Madison Square Garden in November 28th, 1974. And you can actually find some of this stuff on YouTube.
Lucy in the Sky, I think, was one of the songs they did.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. I'm not sure. I don't have that.
Yeah, yet. I'm pretty sure. I have the album. I bought it. Yeah.
But no one knew that would be John Lennon's very last live performance.
And I have it on vinyl.
I'm just saying.
I'm going to throw that on friggin' eBay, see what that goes for.
Yeah. Do it.
Yeah, I know, right?
Do it.
Yeah, so, yeah, now his Whatever Gets You Through the Night hit number one in the USA, but only made it up to number 36 in the UK. But it's his only number one.
And he's from Britain.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah. Well, same reason like last time when we talked about, they have a total different perspective. When he said about, you know, we're more popular than Jesus, it went like crazy in the United States. In the UK, they said,
crazy, positively?
Yeah. No, crazy? No, negatively.
No, that's when they burned.
Right.
They burned all the albums and boycotted the shows.
Right.
But in the UK, they went, just some rocker flapping off. They didn't even care.
They didn't care.
So they have a totally different perspective. But anyway, that was his last live performance, and you can actually see some of it on YouTube. I'll try to find that link. Last live performance.
He said that? That's like Dixie chick shit.
Okay, so hold on. Wait a second. I'm a little confused. So John Lennon. You're talking about John Lennon.
I am talking about John Lennon.
His last live performance was when?
1974.
And he died 6 years later?
That is correct.
He didn't perform live for 6 fucking years. Is that what you're telling me?
Was Netflix available then? I don't think
no,
so.
No, no.
Is that
it was
what you're
not.
Telling me?
What was he doing then?
No, what? No, it wasn't.
So he didn't do anything live for 6 years.
That is correct.
Okay, we're going to be checking that.
We're going to be fact-checking this.
So we just checked that out, and that's a fact. John Lennon did not perform live after 1974. That's incredible.
Yeah, he did a lot of studio work.
No, but live performances. I mean, that's a big part of an artist when you're promoting an album. Now, mind you, when he came out with Double Fantasy 1980, he didn't have a chance to promote it.
Well, don't forget, you do a lot of the research on the Beatles, that Lennon had a lot of psychological issues. He had fear of a lot of different things. He didn't have a lot of confidence in certain aspects of his performances. And for him to go out there by himself would have been a huge stretch for him.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I guess so, yeah.
You know, and he went out, he did this one with Elton John, and in some of the YouTube video that you watch on this, you can see Yoko Ono in the audience, and they cut to her a number of different times.
Yeah.
And she's like, you can tell she's nervous for him.
Really?
Yeah, and then at the end, because everybody's rocking, and she's just sitting watching. She's not even moving. And then at the end, when it's over, you can see the relief on her face. Because
really?
I think she knows
that. I'm going to watch
that. Yeah, she knows that he's struggling.
Oh, wow. I'm going to double check the value on my LP that I got.
Although, in fairness, whenever I saw any picture or video of Yoko Ono, it was pretty straight faced. So
well, it tells a lot of story just watching her watch him.
Really? Okay, all right, cool.
Yeah, I'll try to find that link as well and put that in the show notes.
I'll be checking that out right away.
I watched it. And I thought, what's the matter with Yoko? And then I started doing the research. Oh, she's
a lot of people said, what's the matter with Yoko?
But I think she was just concerned for him because it was his first time up there in a long time, and really? It ended up being his last.
Yeah, it's cool, man.
Yeah. Huh. Anyway, there you go.
That's cool.
That was 1974.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff we covered in the first part of the 70s, eh?
Yeah, have we got anything else, or is that it for this episode?
Well, I mean, we can talk about a lot more stuff, but I think we better save it. Honorable mention to David Bowie. David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust, we didn't mention that.
Yeah.
Mark Bolan from T-Rex. Didn't mention him.
Wow, there's just, I mean,
it's endless.
We can cover Bowie in the second half.
Well, and Mark Bolan as well. I mean, Mark Bolan died in 77, so I'm sure that'll be part of it.
Yeah.
But
all right, so we'll make sure everybody looks forward to, you know, part two of Memorable Moments from the 1970s. But for this episode, I think we'll call it a wrap. And that's it for Oat,
Queeks,
and Cha,
the Jabber Guys.
Remember to go to our website, jabberguys.com, to subscribe to our podcasts, Inside Rock and Weird and Wacky World.